Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app. Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
From KQED.
Hello, hello.
Is that Frank?
Yes, hello. Hey, this is Donald, the engineer here. Hey, Frank.
What have you done with Frank? This is Political Breakdown from KQED in San Francisco. I'm Scott Schaefer.
And I'm Marisa Lagos. Concerns over crime and public safety are the backdrop for a lively and very competitive race to be LA County's top prosecutor.
From the minute he took office, incumbent George Gascon faced an insurrection inside the office as career prosecutors took issue with Gascon's criminal justice reform agenda.
When he first ran for office 4 years ago, Gascon promised to make big changes, like not seeking the death penalty, not charging juveniles as adults, and getting rid of cash bail.
And now he's facing an uphill battle, we think, with 11 candidates challenging him, including three of his own deputy district attorneys. We're going to look into the dynamics of the race, the stakes for criminal justice reform, and Gascon's chances for political survival. And joining us is a veteran reporter who we've heard from many, many years here, and he's been covering criminal justice issues in Los Angeles County for you know, probably decades, I think it's fair to
You're
say.
You're dating him, Scott.
Frank Stoltz from LAist. That's fair to say, isn't it, Frank?
Sure, why not?
Yeah.
Just as long as you don't call me old.
Yeah, we're not going to do that.
We would never do that.
No. So, okay, so we kind of laid out the broad strokes there. This is a race where George Gascon, the incumbent district attorney, is facing a very stiff challenge. 11 people running against him. Why is he facing so many critics and challengers?
Well, I think you have to go back to 2020 when he was first elected. And that was the year, of course, that George Floyd was murdered. And it was a reform year. And he billed himself as the ultimate reformer. And he beat an incumbent DA, Jackie Lacey, at the time. And immediately on day one, he enacted a sweeping set of reforms, you could call them radical and major thrust being that he wanted to reduce criminal penalties against people convicted of crimes, things like no longer filing sentencing enhancements, which added time to people who, for instance, committed crime with a gun, and a whole set of other sweeping reforms. It doesn't prosecute misdemeanors, many of them, unless they're repeat offenders. So a sweeping set of reforms in 2020. And as you say, there was an immediate reaction from rank and file prosecutors. That was a reform year. This year, of course, is much more focused in on crime, mm-hmm. What you might call a more traditional environment for a district attorney's race, where the focus is on who's going to be tougher on crime, or at least more so than in 2020. And as you say, he's facing 11 challengers, including some of his own prosecutors. It's a fascinating race. It's really a referendum on criminal justice reform in Los Angeles, which has really been the epicenter for criminal justice reform in the country. So it's being watched across the country.
Yeah. And as you say, I mean, he ran on this agenda, right? I mean, voters accepted it and voted him in. But he did, I would say, come out of the gate pretty strong. He did not sort of build any consensus in the office. He came out, I think, the day he was sworn in with a bunch of these directives. So 11 challengers, though, I mean, that could really muddy the argument against him to have that many people in the race, especially if they're running on kind of similar, tougher on crime platforms. I mean, has anyone like risen above the crowd so far?
Well, I would say there are probably four people who are his major challengers. One of them is the Republican nominee for state attorney general in 2022, Nathan Hochman, who's now a criminal defense attorney. But he is now running as an independent. This is a nonpartisan race, but he's shifted from his Republican registration to an independent registration or declined to state. And he is raised the most money, nearly $2 million in this race. Nobody's come close to that. And he is one of his strongest competitors. Another is one of his own prosecutors, John Hatami, who has fashioned himself also to the right of Gascon. And both of these folks have promised to retract almost all of his reforms. Mm. And John Hatami has been on, for instance, the local Fox affiliate a lot over the years, criticizing Gascon, so he's made a name for himself. And then two other people, one Eric Sadal, who is the former vice president of the District Attorneys Association, the rank-and-file labor union, and he is not quite as far right as Hatami and Hockman, but pretty far to the right of Gascon. And then Jeff Chemerinsky is the fourth, and he is the son of the dean of the UC Berkeley Law School, noted constitutional law professor.
And former dean of UC Irvine as well, so he's probably, his name's been well-known down there for years. Well,
in a lot of places.
Yeah, so let me ask you, you know, up here in the Bay Area, crime and punishment, some of these smash and grabs that went viral has been a big narrative in the mayor's race and in the recall of our own district attorney of a couple of few years ago. So how is that issue playing out in Los Angeles? Is that like a constant sort of background noise?
It is, and I think it's added to a sense of disorder in Los Angeles, where we also are in the midst of a homelessness crisis. And so we see a lot of people on the streets. We see the smash and grab robberies, which are always caught on video, and there's a real sense of disorder. The numbers tell a little bit of a different story. While property crime is up about 3%, violent crime is down about 3%. And so while those aren't, you know, great numbers, 3% incline or increase in property crimes, it's not, you know, a dystopian Los Angeles right now.
Well, you wouldn't know that by how some of the candidates are talking, though, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I mentioned Jeff Chemerinsky as the fourth candidate. He's the only one that talks like George Gascon does about reducing mass incarceration, and would probably retain some of the reforms that George Gascon has enacted. So he is running as somebody who is somebody called George Gascon Light. I don't know if it's quite that, but he is definitely somebody who is not running so far to the right of Gascon. He says, hey, there's need for reform in the criminal justice system, just not as far as George Gascon has gone. And I can't emphasize, I mentioned him at the top, these reforms really are quite dramatic at the LA County DA's office.
I mean, they are, but a lot of them are coming on the back end, right? We're talking about once somebody has been convicted, how steep of a sentence do they, you know, face? And I just do wonder, we see these numbers, Gascon's approval rating is just fully underwater. And yet we've also seen Californians repeatedly vote to support criminal justice reform. Do you think that this is, like, our voters, have they gone as far to the right as, say, a Nathan Hockman?
We'll see.
Yeah.
I talked to one voter who really, I think, captured the mood of a lot, and she described herself as a progressive voter and said, you know, I think things have gone, quote unquote, too far in Los Angeles. And this comes amidst a general move to the left in Los Angeles, more progressive politics on the, for instance, the LA City Council. And there are a couple of city council races, which are also bellwethers to see how far people are supporting these progressive policies. And when I say these progressive policies, I mean policies where you're not using the police as much to enforce, for instance, anti-camping laws, and you're focused more on getting people into shelters. And it's interesting, you know, people too often conflate homelessness with the increase in crime. But again, that's the sense in Los Angeles, that because people are seeing a homelessness a lot on the streets, that there's just a sense that crime has gone up.
Exactly. And just real quickly, we should remind people that, you know, Nathan Hockman is a Republican, or was a Republican. Now he's no party preference. Marisa, you've talked with him when he was running for Attorney General. He's not a Trumpy Republican.
No, not at all.
And, you know, so he's a more reasonable,
traditional,
Maybe I would say more in the style of Steve Cooley, who had been the district attorney in L.A. County, who ran for Attorney General and lost very narrowly to Kamala Harris in 2010. So that's very much what we're looking at in Los Angeles. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Frank Stoltz from LAist, maybe look at some of these competitive House races in California where Democrats are fighting each other. You're listening to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer. We'll be right back.
Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app. Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
And welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer here with Marisa Lagos. We're talking with veteran reporter Frank Stoltz from LAist. And Frank, I want to get to some of those congressional races. But before we do, just a follow-up on Gascon. There was a poll from USC a few weeks ago looking at his approval rating, and it was really, really underwater. I think just like 24% approval, something along those lines, with 51% disapproval. To what extent do you think, is that the person? In other words, did he do things? Did he have bad judgment? Is he not good with the media? Or is it really more of just the way people are feeling about public safety in this moment?
Yeah, it's probably both. I mean, he has not done a very good job of selling his policies to the public. And he has not been out front selling himself as a crime fighter. And, you know, he's almost exclusively sold himself as a reformer. And I think that, you know, in a DA, people want reform. They want a fair justice system, but they also want to feel safe and they want to have a sense that their DA is, you know, fighting for public safety. And he just hasn't done that very much. In recent months, he's put out more press releases talking about, you know, high profile arrests and, retail, organized retail theft task force and things like that. But over the course of the 3.5 years, he hasn't done that very well.
Right. And as we said, when he came in, I mean, he kind of pushed this stuff through, I think, in a manner that maybe would have benefited from a little bit more politicking and building some coalitions out there. And, we've seen this with some of the other progressive DAs. I think Chesa Boudin got, obviously, some of it was circumstance, but some of it was also the way he handled it.
Yeah.
I'm curious, though, Frank. I mean, one of the things we saw in 2020, you know, in the wake of George Floyd's murder, as this campaign was playing out, was a lot of investment in this race by big progressive national groups, George Soros funded PACs helping Gascon. It doesn't seem like those national groups are playing in this race. And I wonder if you know why and if you think that Gascon could actually miss the runoff entirely. Like, is there a world in which two of these other folks who have raised way more money than him make the runoff and he doesn't?
He still enjoys the most name recognition, and he has the ballot title district attorney, and he still has a lot of support out there. Granted, it's very, very low for an incumbent, but still more than the other 11 candidates. I mean, he's certainly benefiting from there being such a crowded field. You know, it's interesting. You're right. The progressive crime groups from around the country came in and supported him in 2020. They're not participating in the primary, but the right-wing groups aren't really participating in the primary either. The police unions, the two big ones, the one that represents the LAPD rank and file officers, the other representing LA sheriff's deputies, have not participated in this primary. But you can be sure, and I think it's a sure thing that Gascon, to answer your question, will get into the runoff. The question is who will run against. Mm-hmm. You can be sure that these groups on both sides will be participating in the general election in a big way. And that's, I suppose, when the real referendum begins on his progressive policies, and we'll see, you know, a lot of spending, I predict, in the general election.
Yeah,
hard
to bring clarity when you got 12 people running. All right, let's take a look at three of the races for the House of Representatives down in Southern California. They're all very competitive and open seats where the incumbent Democrat there is not running for re-election, which, of course, sets off a stampede of candidates. And, Frank, let's start with one district in the suburbs east of L.A. That's where longtime member of Congress Grace Napolitano is retiring after 26 years in Washington. I believe she's 83 years old. This is, as I said, it's a very safe district for Democrats. But tell us about, first of all, the candidate that Napolitano has endorsed, and that's State Senator Bob Archuleta.
Yeah, he's the former mayor of Pico Rivera, and that's a small city in the district. And he's raised about $250,000, not a ton of money. This particular seat hasn't attracted a lot of funding for the various candidates. But Barb Archuleta is a well-known state senator that Napolitano has endorsed. It's unclear to me why she has picked him among the other candidates, but she is, and her endorsement obviously means something because she was a very popular congresswoman from this area.
Yeah. I mean, it does look like the two other kind of biggest name, highest polling candidates include Gil Cisneros, who was previously a congressman for a district that included parts of L.A. and Orange County, lotto winner. Which is self-funding.
$266 million.
And State Senator Susan Rubio, who's seen as sort of a more moderate Democrat. She's being attacked by Cisneros for being sort of a corporate money Democrat. How are those two candidates kind of shaking things up here for Archuleta? Like, does one of them look like they're doing better?
Well, Cisneros is particularly interesting because he's endorsed by Nancy Pelosi, and he also has raised about $250,000. So he has some backing, and he, of course, is a former congressman. He represented the 39th district for 2 years in 2018-2019, and he also served as the Undersecretary of Defense. So he's a guy who has been around and is well-known. State Senator Susan Rubio, the public school teacher for 17 years and is popular in particularly the Baldwin Park and Monrovia area. She's raised the most money in this district, at least as of about a month ago. She raised about $460,000. So she's competitive just on that basis alone.
Yeah, and of course, and you could say this about all three of these House seats we're going to look at, Frank, but there could be a low turnout. It looks like there will be. If that's the case, like, which of these candidates do you think that would benefit? Any idea?
Well, probably Archuleta, because he is got probably the most name recognition. Hard to tell, though. There's another candidate I'm just going to throw in the mix here, and that's mm-hmm. Kurt Jose. He's the owner of a biotech company. He's seeking to become the second Filipino to serve in Congress. So that's kind of an interesting twist.
Yeah. All right. And we should say the top two will go on to November. And this is a safe Democratic district, not like the next one we want to talk about, which could very easily flip. And these are two seats down there where the incumbents are running for the U.S. Senate, Katie Porter and Adam Schiff, running for the U.S. Senate seat held by Dianne Feinstein. So let's go down to that Porter seat, CD Congressional District 47. It includes Irvine, Huntington Beach, Newport Beach. And this is one where the Republican, Scott Baugh, ran against Katie Porter a couple of years ago, came very close to beating her within 3 points, percentage points, and he was vastly outspent, like almost 10 to 1. So tell us about the two Democrats who are running, State Senator Dave Minn and Joanna Weiss.
Well, this is a super interesting race because Katie Porter, you know, loomed large and is now, of course, running for the Senate. So she's a big seat to fill. State Senator Dave Minn is an interesting candidate. He, of course, had this DUI last year, and that prompted many to say he shouldn't be running at all. But he is looking strong. He's a Korean-American. He likes to point out that 20% of eligible voters in this district are Asian American, and that he would be best suited to beat likely Republican opponent, Scott Baugh, because of this. He did face that setback with the DUI, but he's soldiered on and has quite a few supporters and endorsements. The other Democratic candidate is Joanna Weiss, and she's a super interesting candidate. She started a group called Women for American Values and Ethics called WAVE. It was a fundraising and volunteer effort that embodied the political awakening of suburban women after Trump's election in 2016, to quote Politico. And so it's a valuable background for her because she argues, of course, that her work mobilizing women voters will come in handy against Baugh in what's expected to be a very close race in November.
I mean, one thing that has struck us is how some outside groups are spending in this race. Joanna Weiss was endorsed by Emily's List, which is a pro-choice Democratic women's group. Maybe not too shocking there. But then it looks like she's also gotten some support from groups associated with AIPAC. That's the pretty conservative pro-Israel PAC. Has the Gaza-Israeli conflict been an issue in this district, like in the race, or is it just kind of playing out behind the scenes in this spending?
It's been more behind the scenes and the spending on behalf of Weiss.
Any idea why? I mean, this isn't like a heavily Jewish district or anything, right?
Well, I don't think that, you know, Dave Min has come out strongly in support of people who are suffering in Gaza. So it hasn't been a flashpoint between the two.
He has been critical of Netanyahu and also the West Bank settlements, like a lot of people. And he was also endorsed, we should say, by the California Legislative Jewish Caucus, including Scott Wiener and Jesse Gabriel.
So
kind of a head scratch.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know
very
that.
Confusing.
Yeah.
All right. One more seat to go, and that is Adam Schiff's seat. And again, we have three somewhat well-known. I mean, Angelenos don't really pay that close attention to politics, or so I'm told. But State Senator Anthony Portantino, Assemblywoman Laura Friedman, and City Attorney Mike Feuer, and I guess we should say child actor Ben Savage as well. It is Burbank, after all. Tell us about that race. I mean, this one hasn't been as noisy as the Porter seat.
Yeah, I think you should pay a little bit more respect to Ben Savage. You know, he was the lead role. well, 1.37 million more. He's raised a lot of money. He's, you know, among the top four or five candidates who've raised the most money. So he's definitely a player. He did run for, I think it was a city council seat maybe or something 2 years ago, did not fare well, but he's raised much more money this time. And you've talked about the four candidates. This is a 56% registered Democrats here, 16% registered Republicans. All the candidates are raising more money in this, because I mentioned some of the numbers in the Napolitano race. Here we've got Senator Portantino raising 1.4 million, Savage the 1.37. We have LA school board member Nick Melvoin, who's raised 1.2 million. Mike Feuer, the former city attorney, 1.27 million, and almost $1 million for state assembly member Laura Friedman. So this is a wealthy district, and as you said, it includes Hollywood, and so it's a fascinating race. And it's hard to predict who among these five candidates will end up in the general election.
Well, let me ask a quick question, because there are a couple of Republicans running. Is it possible that the Democrats could split the vote enough that you end up with one Democrat and one Republican who would not have a lot of, you know, chance of winning in November, but nonetheless?
They haven't raised a lot of money. I think there are three or four Republicans actually running in this race. They haven't raised a lot of money. They haven't gotten their name out very much. Although you're right, I mean, if it's going to be a low turnout election, which it's definitely shaping up to be, then, you know, more conservative, older, tend to be more white voters will be showing up to the polls. And that could, I suppose you could get a Republican in here, but I think it's doubtful just given the shape of the race and the money being spent.
Well, I mean, given all that and the fact that a lot of these, you know, intra-party fights end up sort of boiling down to personalities more than policy differences, is there any issue you're seeing rise to the top? I know there's been some reporting on, I think, a fifth of voters are Armenian-American, and the conflict, you know, in that region is actually playing big among them. But I can't tell if there's any, like, sort of big policy issues that are really dividing this group of Democrats.
You know, some of it boils down to, you know, who's in the hands of corporate America and who isn't. There's been criticism of Anthony Portantino for taking that kind of money. But a lot of it is personality. A lot of it, of course, will be determined by the ground game, the GOTV, the get out the vote efforts. I'm in this district, and I've only been visited by Laura Friedman's people so far. That could just be happenstance.
Don't they know you're an influencer?
How's your mailbox look? Is it stuffed full of mailers?
You know, it's interesting. I've gotten a couple of Laura Friedmans and one Portantino, but I haven't gotten anything from Melvoin, Fuhrer, or Ben Savage. I was really hoping for that Ben Savage photo.
Right?
You know,
yes.
Try and get him to sign next time I see him.
Well, we should mention Portantino has a lot of support from labor. He recently reintroduced a bill that Governor Newsom vetoed that would have given unemployment insurance and benefits to striking workers. He's also got an ad out sort of touting his gun control record. And then you've got the mayor, Karen Bass, who's endorsed the former city attorney, Mike Feuer. Do endorsements matter in a race like this, or might labor with its, you know, kind of of people on the ground ringing doorbells or making phone calls? Is that more important?
A big part of this district is not in the city of Los Angeles, so I'm not sure how valuable Karen Bass is, although the mayor is extremely popular at this point. So, for parts of the district that are still in the city of L.A., I suppose that helps. You do mention the L.A. County Federation of Labor and the California Teachers Association backing Portantino, and those are valuable. In terms of the backing for other candidates, the endorsements, not a lot of huge names. People do take their cue. As you know, people vote based on, two or three main things. One is endorsements. They take their cue from endorsements. One is political party, of course. And then one is, surname. Mm. I think the Democratic Party stayed out of this race. Had it endorsed somebody, I think they would be a shoo-in to get into the runoff. There'll definitely be a runoff, though.
All right. You said one thing there I just got to follow up on, that Karen Bass is incredibly popular. I feel like that's very rare in this moment. I know she didn't get elected all that long ago, but...
By that big a margin.
Yeah. It was such a tight race. I mean, are you seeing that popularity play out in any other way in this election cycle in terms of like how voters are... I don't know, just engaging. I feel like, yeah.
Well, we have a very hot city council race where a progressive who was elected 4 years ago is facing a strong challenge. And it's a bit of a referendum on progressive policies here in Los Angeles, like the DA's race. And the mayor has come in behind her in that race, in that city council race. And I think it could play a role there. So I think in some of the more local races, the council races, the mayor's endorsement will help. I mean, she is a progressive mayor, but she's also passed approved one of the biggest labor contracts for the police department and one of the biggest biggest budgets for the LAPD. Mm-hmm. So she also toes a pretty middle line.
Yeah. And we should say also the probably most coveted endorsement, or one of the most, Adam Schiff. He has not picked a candidate in this
That's
race,
right.
So he'll probably keep his powder dry.
Porter did.
Exactly. All right. Frank Stoltz from LAist. Thank you so much.
Always good to talk to you.
All right. That is a wrap for Monday, March 4th. Political Breakdown is a production of KQED. Don't forget to vote. Tomorrow, it's Election Day. Although you can vote today.
Yeah.
Drop it in the mail, whatever you want to do. And also, we're going to have live coverage throughout the night tomorrow. It's a collaboration of the California Newsroom starting in the 7 o'clock hour before the polls close.
Yeah, we'll have one of Frank's colleagues there. And all the results and analysis throughout the night. For now, our engineer is Brandon Willard, our producer is Izzy Bloom, and I am Marisa Lagos.
And I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to vote.